They say America is the land of opportunity.
I'm looking for work.
And in a town called Red Rock.
I thought you were supposed to be here last Friday.
It comes served on a plate.
And you're Lyle from Dallas, right?
Right.
Good. I think the best way to do this is to make it look like a simple burglary.
Well, you know what to do.
Your name's Suzanne? I hate to see an innocent woman get hurt, but it's an awful lot of money.
Suppose I double his offer and you do something for me.
What do you have in mind?
We just thought you needed a stupid bartender or something.
Looks like we have an attempted homicide on our hands.
You tell him Lyle from Dallas finally showed up, he'll know who you mean.
I can't.
Looks like the only thing you didn't lie about is your marriage.
Marriage is just a state of mind.
Not in Texas.
We're not in Texas.
You're one lucky son of a bitch.
I know.
Nicolas Cage. Dennis Hopper. Lara Flynn Boyle.
You think you're real hot shit, don't you, Mike? Choose life.
Red Rock West.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic... Mike
DiCriscio. Oh no, did I freeze?
It was weird. Your screen was moving, but you weren't saying anything.
Oh, well, I said my name.
All right, well, that's the dangers of doing a Skype podcast.
There you go.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good. We're just going to keep going? Okay. All right,
I'm doing great.
As long as Skype doesn't let us down.
Right. And it's never let us down in the past, so why should it now? Right, Mike?
Well, we could say that. It'd be a lie, though.
God, we are sponsored by Skype, Mike.
Oh, wait.
I, for one, welcome our Skype overlords.
Yeah, you should.
Today, we're going to be discussing Nicolas Cage in the 1994 neo-noir Red Rock West, something of an art house hit that year for director John Dahl. Cage plays Michael Williams, a drifter who stumbles into some trouble early in the film, then proceeds to get into the worst possible situation he can possibly get himself in at every turn.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's truly remarkable how fucked that character is from moment one.
Yeah. Like, right at the outset.
Yeah, my main note for this movie as I was watching this was that the alternate title for this movie should be Nicolas Cage Gets Progressively More Fucked.
Yeah.
It could have aired like that on cable.
That's exactly how it would have worked. You're right.
Now, the journey of Red Rock West, it's kind of a tongue twister of a title, I would say.
A little bit.
The journey of Red Rock West is an interesting one. It was made in 1992 on a budget of $7 million, but after some poor test screenings, the studio didn't really know what to do with it. So one marketing consultant at the time said, "The film doesn't really fall neatly into any marketable category. A Western film noir isn't something people can immediately spark to."
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, I could see that. It's definitely a difficult film to market. One of the film's producers suggested submitting it to the Sundance Film Festival, but was shot down as the studio believed it was not a festival film. And it ended up getting sold to cable and even shown on HBO a few times during the fall of 1993. But the journey doesn't end there, Mike. I can see you're hanging on my every word.
Keeps going. And I gotta know. Like, tell me.
Yeah, the journey doesn't end there, because Red Rock West did open in some foreign markets in 93, where it was discovered by the director of the Toronto Film Festival, who decided to show it there in September of that year. And then Bill Banning, owner of the Roxy Cinema in San Francisco, saw the film there and liked it so much that he discovered who owned the rights to the movie and started showing it in his theater in 1994, where it broke box office records and expanded to 8 theaters in the city. So it toured the U.S. as a small art house hit, making Red Rock West a weird case where a film got its theatrical release after it had already played on cable.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. It's like the HBO and all of that was the Wild West then. So it's interesting that
that's true. It was the Red Rock West.
It was. You're right, Mike. It was a Western neo-noir cable network.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, HBO was not known for its original programming or anything like that. It was basically just buying up movies and showing as many movies as possible just to fill up the airtimes. And its only selling point was that it was the premium cable channels that could show them uncensored.
Yeah, it's interesting that that's a pretty crazy story for this tiny little movie about how it happened that way.
It's the little movie that could. Yes. Also another fun tidbit. Red Rock West is Nicolas Cage's highest-ranked movie on Rotten Tomatoes with a 95% rating.
Wow. That's interesting. Right? I didn't know it was his highest one.
It is the highest Nicolas Cage-ranked movie on Rotten Tomatoes. Also, Larry Flynn Boyle's highest at 95%, which that makes more sense.
I don't know, man. Men in Black 2? Question mark.
I believe Men in Black 1? Was she in 2?
I don't remember. Yeah, I don't remember which one she's the villain in. Okay. Are there two villains in the first one? Because isn't it Bug?
I thought she might have been the love interest in the first one, but no, you're right. She was the villain in the second one.
Yeah,
And the second one is terrible. So, there's that.
So just missed.
Red Rock West was directed by John Dahl and written by John and Rick Dahl. This was Dahl's second film after 1989's Kill Me Again, starring Val Kilmer and Michael Madsen, and he would follow it up with the critically acclaimed 1994 thriller The Last Seduction, starring Linda Fiorentino, Peter Berg of Never on Tuesday fame, and Bill Pullman.
Of Never on Tuesday fame.
Of Never on Tuesday great acclaim, is that the more appropriate term?
Wow.
His most recent film was 2007's crime comedy You Kill Me, which got solid reviews and starred Ben Kingsley, Taya Leone, Luke Wilson, and Dennis Farina. He shifted his focus to television over the last 10 years or so, directing episodes of a variety of critically acclaimed series, basically playing like prestige TV bingo. If you look at his Wikipedia and IMDb page, of the series that he's worked on, he's directed episodes for include Dexter, Breaking Bad, Justified, Terriers, Homeland, The Americans, Hannibal, and House of Cards, among several others. So, you know, he's made a name for himself. He's been doing a lot of work in TV in the past couple of years.
Good for him.
Oh, yeah. Red Rock West stars Cage as Michael Williams alongside Lara Flynn Boyle, Dennis Hopper, JT Walsh, Timothy Carhart, Dan Shore, and country singer Dwight Yoakam, who makes his acting debut here and also provides the film with his end credits song, A Thousand Miles from Nowhere. Also, Nicolas Cage and Dennis Hopper, Rumblefish reunion.
That's right. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite things to do in this podcast, is to figure out who Cage has worked with in the past and be like, blank reunion. And especially if it's a movie that's like nobody cares about.
Yeah.
So like in the last episode, we reviewed Guardians of the Galaxy, Dale dives in the movie. It's like, oh, Firebirds reunion. The world was clamoring.
I wonder if we'll ever have a Time to Kill reunion. Probably not.
The Tempo to Uchidere reunion. Yeah. That would be something. I
would be really impressed.
I don't know if I would recognize a Tempo to Uchidere reunion, just because I barely remember that movie outside of the horrific rape scene.
Okay.
But the IMG plot synopsis of this movie reads, when a promised job for tech – this is a user-submitted plot synopsis, by the way, so it's actually okay. When a promised job for Texan Michael fails to materialize in Wyoming, Mike is mistaken by Wayne to be the hitman he hired to kill his unfaithful wife, Suzanne. Mike takes full advantage of the situation, collects the money, and runs. During his getaway, things go wrong and soon get worse when he runs into the real hitman, Lyle.
Whoa.
So, Mike, give me your overall thoughts on Red Rock West. What did you think of Red Rock West? Did you think it effectively did what it set out to do and all those sorts of things?
Yeah. Going into this, I continuously, as we do this podcast, kind of have low expectations for these movies, just to set the bar low, and this way I can be pleasantly surprised. This movie exceeded my expectations, which, as I said, wasn't that hard to do.
Exceeded your low expectations.
yeah. It started, I wasn't really sure where this movie was going minute ago. I thought there was going to be a little issue with the morality that it sets out in the very like the first couple minutes of Michael, the character Michael. But then it actually stays really true to that, and it follows a pretty straightforward good guy and gets twisted up with the bad guys kind of plot, which is a classic noir person gets, you know,
right.
Classic noir device. The main character gets mistaken for somebody he's not, and then bad shit happens to him.
Yes, absolutely.
And it does that really well, actually. It does a good enough job with the pacing and with the twists and turns the plot goes that it keeps you engaged. There was a little lull, I think, for a minute there in the middle where I was kind of like, all right, okay. They would just leave at this point. And then, like, twist happens. And like, oh, okay, now, like, I'm back in it. And cool. So I had a fun time with this movie. It did hit a lot of fun stuff with the noir western mashup thing going on,
right?
Which I thought was cool. Which it's an interesting update to take the noir, which is a classic, classically urban story, and set it in a town of like 1,500 people or whatever it's supposed to be.
Yep,
would see that sign a bunch of times. So I had a fun time with it.
That's good. Yeah, I also very much enjoyed this. I don't know if it's just because I just recently watched it in close succession to something else. But it really reminded me of the pilot episode of The Night Of on HBO, where, you know, you're watching this protagonist and it's pretty much almost entirely focused on him.
Right.
Just get into worse and worse situations.
Yeah. Just make mistake after mistake after mistake.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and in this case, the protagonist is Cage. And I think Cage is doing a really subdued job in this movie. He's underplaying it a lot.
Yes.
As compared
to
a lot of his other stuff. Maybe minus like three instances of like shouting, but
and they feel kind of justified. So.
Oh yeah, in those scenes they work. But I think the underplaying is very wise here because he's acting next to Dennis Hopper, who is going insane.
in this movie,
And I gotta
out Dennis Hopper. Dennis Hopper,
yeah,
like.
I gotta talk Dennis Hopper because he is one of America's great psychopathic villains.
Yes.
You know, and he's crushing it here. He's crushing it. He's doing, I think, a very similar performance to what he does in Blue Velvet here. you know, he's just going all out. He's going insane.
Yeah. I was really worried you were going to say Speed for a second.
I mean, there's shades of Speed. You know?
It's in there.
No, I was actually, he's really evoking his oeuvre from Super Mario Brothers. it's really what it is. No, but he does a great job here. He's a fantastic villain.
Yeah, but my note is Dennis Hopper, as always, playing the creepiest, menacing human he can.
Exactly. exactly. Dennis Hopper is so good at just being, like, this really insane, creepy person.
Yeah.
Honestly, he's one of my favorite actors. If he's a good candidate for season two of The Complete Works.
Oh, my God. In 25 years, when we finish season one. We have to do Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, Dennis Hopper is definitely a candidate. but yeah, all the core actors, I think, do a pretty good job. Lifeline Boyle is a really good femme fatale here. J.T. Walsh as Wayne is a pretty good hapless kind of antagonist here. and Boyle had some experience femme fataling around, twin peaking all over the place, right?
Yep. Yeah, lots of that going on.
Firewalking with her.
well, she's not actually in that.
She's not.
Her character is recast for the film. However, she is super femme fatale for the series. Okay. So.
I mean, I know you're the Twin Peaks guy. I have not watched any of it yet, although I'm starting it soon. It's my summer project. I want to watch Twin Peaks. It's happening. The thing that piqued my interest the most about this movie is that when I went to Netflix to add it to my DVD queue, I added it, and it said, oh, other recommended titles, and the first two things that came up were Twin Peaks and Twin Peaks Fire Walk with Me.
There you go.
Like, ooh, I'm in for some Lynchian stuff.
Yeah, Lynchian noir.
Yeah, and I think it's not all-out insanity like Lynch, you know.
Yeah, this is pretty grounded in this world.
Pretty grounded in this world, although it is a lot of the story is based on coincidence and things that happen. But I think it works very effectively inside that. Like, it's kind of thing where, like, every 5 minutes I felt like a new reveal took place that made me go, oh, crap! How's Cage going to get out of this one? and I think my favorite example of that is when Cage has gone back to the bar after Dennis Hopper has picked him up in the car. Mm. And he goes back to the bar. Dennis Hopper's going to buy him a drink. Cage goes to the bathroom, and then Wayne returns. And then Cage is like, oh, shit, oh, shit, oh, shit. Because Wayne is back, and Dennis Hopper, Lyle, is going to find out that Cage is impersonating him. Right. And so Cage climbs out the window and climbs on top of the roof of the building. And then there's a truck next to the building that's running. Right. And it's, like, packing up, about to leave. Cage lowers a plank onto the truck and starts to, like, tightrope his way across the plank. And then halfway across the tightrope, like, thing, the truck starts to move. But it's very slowly moving. And so it's ratcheting up the tension in such a way where it's, like, every scene is like that, where it's, like, Cage gets himself in this horrible situation. And the worst thing that could possibly happen in that situation happens.
Yeah, I mean, even the reveal right before that, when we find out that Dennis Hopper is Lyle.
Yes, that's
when
true.
When they order a drink at the bar, and he just casually mentions his name, and it's like, it's so scary.
Yeah, or the fact that he hits the guy with his car that turns out to be Larry Flynn Boyle's lover.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much there's so many of that going on, which I love. It's really interesting that is a like to put that, like I said, move the noir story from the city to the country. And
And they emphasize a lot that this is a very small town. And all the coincidences and stuff that happen throughout this movie make it feel like it's a very small town.
Yeah, exactly.
Makes it work very effectively. Are there any like favorite scenes that you have in this movie, Mike? Things that made you excited? Things that made you feel very intense? Very emotionally invested, perhaps?
Nothing really stands out to me as like a one standout scene. They just kind of all are pretty good. I was really, there's just like, we were gushing about Dennis Hopper for a second. when he, there's a scene where he just burns down a house, right. I guess it's extraction. And he's drinking some kind of liquor, I guess. And he starts dumping it out, and then he gets right to the end, and he does this weird like bottle flip thing to like save the last drop for himself. And it's just such a weird, like, character choice for him to do that. Right. And it was just like, oh, Dennis Hopper, you're the best. Yes. Missed that guy.
That was great. And also one great scene in this movie. There's a scene where Cage goes back to save Larry Flynn Boyle's character.
Right.
After escaping the whole bar thing and after the whole truck scene. He goes back to her house to save her. And Dennis Hopper shows up in that scene. Cage takes him out. Cage has this amazing one-liner regarding where Larry Flynn Boyle comes out and says, like, hey, what should I do? And Cage, like, has knocked out Dennis Hopper. And it's like, if I were you, I'd get a divorce.
Yes. I do remember that, yeah.
which was the best. Because Larry Flynn Boyle, his character, is married to J.T. Walsh's character. And the entire plot of the movie is about J.T. Walsh is trying to get her killed with Dennis Hopper as the hitman. But it turns out they are actually fugitives.
Yeah. They embezzled $2 million or something and fled to Wyoming, I guess.
Yeah.
Where they had enough time to become where he became sheriff.
Yeah, and owns a bar.
Yeah, that was another one of those great twists when they're at the hospital and they call the sheriff and then Wayne comes in as the sheriff. Lots of puckering going on.
There's a lot of that. What did you think of the climax of this movie taking place in the cemetery?
A little on the nose. No. no, I thought it was pretty interesting. I especially the manner in which Nicolas Cage dispatches somebody on a gravestone, which is apparently a monument to World War II soldiers. Or World War I soldiers, maybe. I thought that was a really interesting.
Right. And of course, Cage's character is a veteran in this movie.
Yes, as is
Dennis Hopper's character, yeah.
As is Dennis Hopper's, yeah. So I thought that was a cool little weird, creepy thing for them to put in there. That was a nice touch I liked. Well, what I was going to say earlier was the film establishes Michael's morality as being, like, super strong and definitely good aligned as in he felt compelled to tell the foreman of the drill site that he was trying to get a job at about his bum knee.
Right.
Because if he got a job without telling him, it wouldn't be right. But then he's presented with all these opportunities to falter from that. And for the most part, I think he stays true. Because that was one of my complaints originally in the beginning was when Laura Flynn Boyle, or he gets he accepts the job to kill Laura Flynn Boyle or whatever, and he goes to her house.
Yeah.
It's like, she's like, we're not supposed to believe he's going to kill her, right? Because, like, we just established he won't even get a job.
I didn't believe he was going to kill her, yeah, because Laura Flynn Boyle seemed like a big enough actress where she wasn't going to die. But also, yeah, it didn't seem like it would be right with Kate's character.
Yeah, but then they reveal that he's warning her to leave, and, you know, he just takes the money and runs.
Right.
So, I don't know. But then he stays true to that for the most part, and I thought that was a pretty typical classic noir trope, sort of.
Yeah, right to the very end, where, he and Laughlin Boyle are on the train, making their getaway, and Cage dumps out all the money.
And, yeah.
Except for the original $10,000 that I think he took originally from the beginning of the movie. It's like tucked away. But he dumps out all the money and then pushes Larry Flynn Boyle out of the train.
Which is hilarious, but yeah. But he sticks true to his whole thing.
Sticks true. And then at that point, it feels like Cage has been like thoroughly tested by the end of this movie, where it's he can't deal with Laugh Flynn Boyle anymore, you know?
No, he's done.
Even his morality is, like, he will push her out of the train.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you have any other scenes that stuck out to you? I didn't have anything particularly.
I don't know. That's the thing. I feel like it's mostly just very good overall, I think. It's the atmosphere of this movie is really good. I like the recurring use of the Welcome to Red Rock sign that shows up every time Cage ends up coming back into town. It's almost like a running joke throughout the movie where Cage will get out of Red Rock and then be on his way out and then somehow be forced back into Red Rock.
Yeah, he just can't escape the pull of this godforsaken town, apparently.
And it's established every time by using the exact same shot of the sign that says Welcome to Red Rock, population 1,500 or something.
Yeah.
So that was cool. I like the score of this movie a lot. It has like this western-y guitar riff throughout, which was pretty
cool. Yeah, it's really subdued. It's like two or three chords, I think. It's like really not a lot going on, but it's just like slow, twangy, this creeping thing that is in the background of almost the whole movie for the most, like a lot of it.
Yeah. It's just like a really tight, like neo-noir thriller. A lot of cool stuff happening in this movie, but it's also something that I feel like you have to watch in order to appreciate. You can't really talk about as much, I guess. A lot of it is visual, I think. There's a lot of visual things in this movie that I think it does very effectively. The landscapes of the whole Red Rock area kind of give the movie its flavor. Larry Flynn Boyle is a great femme fatale character, I think, if we're putting noir tropes on there.
Yeah. Might as well at this point.
What do you think of her relationship with Cage in this movie? Like the way that develops and changes over the course of the film.
To be honest, I didn't really believe it in any meaningful way. That was another I wasn't sure that he would fall for her so hard. But then in the end, I guess she was just using him, and he was just using her, and then. He just was like, get off this train.
I didn't get the impression that Cage was using her, but I felt like Cage was like a good person. And
yeah, that's true. Maybe that's not what I should have.
But she was definitely. I mean, she was definitely trying to use him. Because even like up through the end of the movie, Cage is trying to save her.
Yes, that's true.
Like he gives her the keys to unlock her hands during the hostage scene. He's the one who goes back to warn her about Lyle coming to kill her and all this stuff. And then the two of them go out to, like, end up escaping Red Rock, go and get drunk, have sex, and then decide, and then she decides.
Cool shenanigans.
Yes, if you listen to our last episode of Film Bookcast, the new phrase for sex is, cool shenanigans ensue.
You don't have to say the air quotes.
I didn't say the air quotes, I did air quotes. I visually did air quotes, but the people listening won't know that I did air quotes. Now they do.
So anyway,
some cool shenanigans happened. And
there you go.
Next morning, Laura Flynn Boyle decides that she wants to get the money back. She wants to get the rest of the money from Wayne. to go back into Red Rock and then flee to Mexico is her plan. And Cage is like, what? Like, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
But he goes along with it ultimately. And, ultimately he ends up going along with whatever she wants to do. Maybe because he's lonely. Maybe because he just needs some love.
Maybe. Yeah, but she's clearly manipulating him into getting to Mexico. That's kind of, her end game there.
Right. And it doesn't really seem to matter whether he's involved with that or not. She just wants to
Right.
go. She wants to get out. All right, Mike, is there anything else you wanted to talk about the movie, or should we move on to some Netflix reviews?
I think we've said all we can say for the most part. Let's hear what some other people have to say.
Yeah, so, I mean, overall, me and you, both pretty big fans of the movie, right?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Definitely.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think, one of the better Nick Cage movies. I don't know if it's highest rated ranked in Rotten Tomatoes best. I don't think it's as high as that, perhaps, but it of the movies we've watched so far anyway, but it's very good. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it's also, there's this funny thing where it seems to be like the burgeoning sex symbol Nicolas Cage, like right before he peaks and hits and does all these big action movies where he's like the biggest guy ever. Is it like, or at least the opening, the very beginning of it, he like gets out of the car and he's like all doing one arm push-ups with no shirt on and like all this weird like close-ups of his abs.
Yeah.
He's like, what's going on? What is this?
All right, let's get into some Netflix reviews starting right now. Here's a 2-star review of Red Rock West. Is there anything more irritating than a suspense film in which none of the characters act logically? Mix in a gratuitous bedroom scene, a gratuitous car versus train chase scene. Actually, that scene was awesome.
I forgot about that scene.
A quartet of trigger-happy ne'er-do-wells and a couple of honky-tonks, and you have a recipe for mediocrity. All four leads were clearly going for brooding as their singular personality trait, which pretty much tested the limits of Nicolas Cage's and Lara Flynn Boyle's acting ranges anyway. Dennis Hopper was just wasted.
Wow. This guy's got some strong words.
Harsh words from Mr. Two-Star over here. here's a 1-star review of Red Rock West. This movie has tremendous potential, but horribly done. There are so many outrageous coincidences and unrealistic parts of the plot. He just happens to go into a bar where the owner is waiting for a guy from Texas, and it just so happens he parks right where the owner can barely see his Texas license plate. Then he orders coffee, even though he has no money. Thank goodness the guy offers him a hitman job so he doesn't have to pay for the coffee. This is a very long review, actually.
This is.
Then the owner just happens to be the sheriff. Then as he is driving out of town, he just happens to hit a guy that is the lover of the wife he is supposed to kill. Every one of these ends in a question mark, by the way.
Oh, okay. I'm glad.
And to top that off, the guy he runs over didn't even try to get out of his way, but just so happens to have 2 bullets in him while being run over.
This guy's just going to question every twist in the movie.
That's basically this review. Then Cage, running from the police, almost gets hit by the real Lyle. I mean, it says 1,500 population in this town, but everyone he hits is involved with his family, and everyone who almost hits him on the road is someone hired by this family. There were hundreds more, but this movie is laughable. I could make a much better plot, then I just need good actors.
Wow. This might be we got to print this and frame this review. This is the best thing ever.
He lists out every plot point of the movie and questions it. Just puts a question mark at the end of it. Here's a 4-star review of Red Rock West. I think Nicolas Cage is a great actor. I enjoyed watching something from years ago. It was refreshing and very entertaining. Nick Cage was great. Some of the other actors, though, questionable.
Oh my god.
Here's another 4-star review. Great movie. Cage plays a really dumb guy who just doesn't know when to get out of Dodge. Boyle is about as sexy as a bisected frog in biology class, but the movie kept me interested clean to the end.
It didn't start off in a good place, and then ended in a good place.
Exactly. Alright, here's the last one. It's a 3-star review of Red Rock West. Agree with the reviewers who like the noir style and feel of this film. It's just that I don't like Nicolas Cage in general, and particularly when he's trying to channel Bogey. I've seen Bogey films. Bogey's like an old friend to me, and Nick, you're no Bogey.
Wow.
Obviously referring to Humphrey Bogart, who I don't think Cage is even trying to emulate in this movie. I mean, I guess I could see a little bit, like, because Bogart was in some noir films, but...
But none of he's got none of the cocksure stuff that Bogart always had, so yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. He's doing, like, a much more subdued, kind of out-of-his-element dude. He's kind of just stuck in the situation. So, yeah, that's a very odd review, but okay.
I think he just likes saying bogey.
I think he does. I think he just likes saying bogey. Because it makes him think of boogers.
What? That's not where I thought you were going to go with that at all.
Where did you think I was going to go with that?
I'm just, not that. Anything but that.
All right, Mike, do you have any final thoughts about Red Rock West?
I think we've said everything there is to say for the most part. It's an interesting take on a neo-noir, smashing it into Western small-town life. It's pretty thrilling. There's lots of cool twists and turns that one reviewer felt pretty strongly about, that they were all redonkulous.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed all the twists and turns. I thought this was a really fun movie, really intense, really good. And it's really unique. It's a Western neo-noir. You don't see that very often.
Yeah.
And Cage is a very good performance here. And also Dennis Hopper, off the leash, and it's great.
Yeah.
So definitely check that out. All right, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
Find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I stream our games at twitch.tv/geonerd79.
All right, and you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all of my work at filmbook.com. Thank you for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. That's Mike DiCriscio, by the way. I said I'm Mike Smith, but I didn't say that's Mike DiCriscio. So I'll throw that in there.
How are they going to know, Mike?
Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us in 2 weeks, where we'll be discussing Nicolas Cage in 1994's film It Could Happen to You, which reunites Cage with his Honeymoon in Vegas director, Andrew Bergman. So we like Honeymoon in Vegas, so we'll see how this goes. Should be good. Yeah. And you can check out this week's film bookcast, where we'll be talking Star Trek Beyond, right, Mike?
In theory.
Probably?
Probably.
Yeah. All right, so Star Trek Beyond, definitely on the docket. So thanks so much for listening, guys. We are out.
Bye.